Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we today will be talking about some of the big early season surprises and disappointments from the 2017-18 regular season. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter, at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content, at FanRag NBA. Joining me today, as always, are my two co-hosts, Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, you two?
Well, Brian, considering we are getting Marvel movies a week before you guys, I'm kind of enjoying myself.
Pretty good, yeah. So, Mort, before we get underway, do you want to give us a quick rundown of Thor Ragnarok? For whatever reason, the Danes get it a week ahead of us U.S. people.
That's because we don't have Trump. We get rewarded.
That's fair.
Well, so if you like a movie that's all about undermining emotional connection for cheap laughs, Thor Ragnarok is just up your alley. I was really disappointed. But then again, I always seek like deeper meanings in movies. I always like, you know, when something hangs together emotionally, and for this one, it just doesn't. Mm. It tries so hard to be Deadpool, but within like a PG-13 narrative.
Oh.
Yeah. So I was disappointed, but you know, that's just me. I was reading all kinds of reviews who saw, you know, for people who saw the early screenings in the US, and most loved it. Mm. And that is slightly disappointing to me, because it proves that if you just put a lot of slapstick humor in a movie, people will love it, which to me just doesn't scream quality at all.
Well, let the record reflect, by the way, that Morten is a big DC Comics fanboy.
Oh, no. Okay, let me just clarify this. We were four people. We were four people watching the movie. My wife, who is a huge Marvel fan, like, she's loved everything they've ever done, looked at me after the final post-credit scene. There are two, by the way, so stick around. There is a mid-credit scene and post-credit scene.
Good to know.
She just, like a robot, she just turned her head and looked at me, and she said, "This is probably the worst piece of crap I've ever seen." Like, what did they do to Thor? Like, why? Like, everything that could have been awesome, they just stole away with a laugh. I feel spoken down to. Mm. My younger brother and his girlfriend was there too. My brother studies film. Like, that's what he does. Like he, when he has an exam, like, he goes up to talk about like movies and from France from like the 1930s or whatever. Like, he's a connoisseur, and he was also like, "Man, that plot just got undermined." Mm-hmm. And I started like trying to eavesdrop on people walking out of the theater, because I was kind of, you know, curious as to what people thought. And some were positive, and some were like, there were two guys. One of them said, "God, I need a drink after this one." So they had to head out to get a beer or something. Like, they were not satisfied at all. So I'm very surprised that the American critics have been so positive for the initial release. We'll see. Obviously, you know, it's movies are always very, very subjective, which I love. Like, I love the fact that I can also watch Batman v Superman and enjoy it. I know that you didn't, and that's fair. That's the way we're built. Right. I mean, I like emotional connections. Some like, you know, over-the-top humor, which I get. I mean, I love Deadpool, for example. Mm-hmm. Absolutely loved it. So, but yeah, I mean, go watch it anyway. Support superhero movies, because superhero movies are still, at the end of the day, awesome, and they should live on forever. So buy tickets.
Right. Disregard everything Mort just said for the last 3 minutes. It was actually a great movie and totally worth your $18 or however much movies cost these
days. You know what? No, okay, I'll take that back if it's 18 bucks. Jesus. 18 bucks? All right. Don't spend 18 bucks. That's ridiculous. I thought you were paying like 8 or 9 bucks for a movie ticket.
Yeah, back in like 1993 maybe.
Oh, damn.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, Americans got shafted in the last 20 years
on
movie tickets.
Yeah. No, then I'm definitely backtracking. Don't. That's too much, because, yeah, unless you like a lot of empty humor, then, you know, Fine. If you're the type of person who likes sitcoms with a laugh track, you'll enjoy this one.
Or you could just stay at home and watch Big Bang Theory on TV. Either way.
Oh, God. That's...
On that note, Sarah, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. There's a cold front rolling in. I can hear the wind blowing, so I'm excited but also a little scared because I don't do well in this cold weather.
Me neither.
Boo freaking who from Scandinavia.
Well, I moved from Chicago to Nashville thinking I wasn't going to be freezing, and then I woke up yesterday and it was 40 degrees here. So like you, Sarah, I am also very pissed off right now, and I miss... Today it was 70, so that was pretty cool, but...
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. It's not going to be negative 20. That's all I care about.
Yeah, well, you have a pass because you used to live in Chicago.
Yeah.
So that's okay, but Sarah, never again
I
about the weather.
Okay, I can't survive in this.
All right, guys. Let's go and talk about some of the latest developments. We recorded on Tuesday, so... We need to at least address this. We talked about it on Tuesday. Markelle Fultz's shooting stroke. At the time, there was no information, no concrete information that had come out. You know, he had alluded to having a nagging shoulder injury. Then about like an hour after we finished recording, because this is always how the NBA works, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN spoke to Fultz's agent, Raymond Brothers, who initially said he had fluid drained from his shoulder. He said his shoulder's in so much pain that he can't, like, raise it above his head. He like, literally cannot shoot a basketball right now. He later amended that to say he actually had a cortisone shot injected into his shoulder, so fluid injected in, not drained out, which is much better, medically speaking. When I told my wife that he had fluid drained out, her eyes bugged out of her head because apparently that's a very bad sign. So cortisone shot is normal, not a huge deal. The Sixers are sitting him. They sat him Wednesday. He's out the next two games as well. He'll be reevaluated on Halloween. The thing we need to discuss more is the handling of all of this, because Brian Colangelo, the team president, came out Wednesday, finally addressed it. Basically contradicted much, if not all, of what Fultz's camp was saying. Suggested that Fultz's agent, Fultz's trainer all said, you know, he started adjusting his shot because of his shoulder injury, and like he was just trying to find a way around like being able to play still, and like even though it really hurt him to shoot a basketball. Colangelo suggested perhaps that the injury was related to him changing his mechanics. So he was trying to overhaul his shooting stroke in August. Maybe that contributed to the soreness, led to whatever injury he has. then again, Fultz's trainer came out, said that's total BS. Basically, yeah. It was just a big pissing match all week between the Fultz camp and the Sixers, and no one came out looking good. Who do you think screwed up more here? Are all parties to blame?
Well, just to clarify for a second, Sam Hinkie was forced out because he wasn't transparent with the media, right?
I believe so, yes.
Huh.
I know, it's strange.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Look at that. That's fun. Yeah, I'm on Team Fultz here. I can't imagine that changing your shooting stroke will make your shoulder be, you know, just mess it up to the degree that you can't raise it over your head.
Yeah, right.
That's ridiculous. I've never heard of that at all. And supposedly no one has, because when it hit Twitter, I did see people were like, yeah, that's not a thing.
Right.
So that seems to be throwing your number one overall pick under the bus,
mm-hmm,
right at the beginning of the season, which is just so bad for so many reasons. I really don't know what else to say. This is just a poor look on the Sixers. I get what you're saying, that no one came out looking good, but I think the Sixers organization came out looking, you know, worse than everyone.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it, you know, Sarah, I asked you this question last time, like, it was very obvious he was dealing with some kind of injury, and was very reluctant to shoot. Like, he hasn't taken a three-point attempt yet, and I asked you, why aren't they sitting him? Like, what's the point in having him play? And you didn't know the answer. There was, you know, there is that Dan Feldman piece where they were saying, like, yeah, he was focusing on everything else, like defense, getting to his sets and pick and rolls, all that good stuff. And, like, we did see flashes of that, but he's just not, you know, he's not helping the team if he's playing and he can't take a shot. Like, it's just not, opponents realize that very quickly, and they didn't have to necessarily guard him at the three-point arc because they knew he wasn't really a threat to go ahead and fire. Like, he was passing up wide-open jumpers. So I'm assuming you think it's the right move for the Sixers to rest him now. Do you have any thoughts about this whole debacle? I know coming from the Spurs side of things, like, you know, Kawhi Leonard's got a quad injury. They are wisely sitting him until he's healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when you finished summing it up, you said, you know, both sides came out looking pretty bad. No one ended up looking good out of this whole thing, and you can really leave it at that. It was handled pretty poorly. It's like, it reminds me of Game of Thrones. it was either late first season or early second season when Joffrey goes biblical and starts killing all of his quote-unquote father's other bastard children.
Mm.
And they come in and kill one of the ones that's hiding out in the brothel. And Littlefinger, the whoremonger. Wow, we're really getting into it on this one, but okay.
Hinky is Ned Stark, right?
Yeah. What's up?
Hinky is Ned Stark, right?
There you go, yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. We need to write this whole thing out. One of the girls in his brothel's crying because of the baby that was killed in front of her, and he says, yeah, that was handled poorly. that's really what I keep thinking of. It keeps ringing in my head. It wasn't handled well by anyone. Last time we spoke, yeah, I said, please just sit him. There's no reason for this. Thankfully, they finally got to that point. So that's good. You know, if it's playoffs or something, fine, but you're at the beginning of this kid's career. He doesn't need to be out there not having his full repertoire of skill available to him. He doesn't need to be out there in pain. You know, he's going to lose confidence. None of that needs to happen at the beginning of a guy's career. So just let him get healthy so he can come out there and start on the right note.
Yeah, totally. And it sounds like, I'm assuming whatever, they still haven't said what the injury is. It sounds, you know, I asked Alex about this. It sounds probably rotator cuff related, but I'm assuming the medical staff, they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt, given how they've handled things in the past few years, but I'm assuming they would not put him out if he's at risk of really exacerbating the injury.
Right.
So I'm assuming, like, Fultz said, you know, I want to play. I don't want to, like, start my career missing games, especially what the Sixers have been through the last few years. But like, it's just better for all parties if he's healthy. It just doesn't make sense to trot him out at 60%. Like, it's so goddamn frustrating. So hopefully he's gonna get better, and we'll have an update next week. But in the meantime, Ben Simmons is still awesome. Let's go. We also talked about Lonzo Ball last time and how his father's comments have been putting a target on his back. We specifically referenced the matchup Wednesday against the Washington Wizards, since Marcin Gortat said John Wall was going to torture him for 48 minutes. In retrospect, Sarah, John Wall did not torture Lonzo for 48 minutes. The Lakers actually escaped with a 102-99 overtime victory. Lonzo did not score all that well. I think he was like 6 points, 2 of 11 shooting, something like that. But they got the W, which is all that matters. So I want to ask this. When I was watching the game, it seemed like Wall really did take this matchup personally and was playing more out of control or more like a hero ball than he usually does. And like, when he's in control and when he's passing to teammates, he was having his way, but then he like really seemed like he just wanted to end Lonzo's life. So do you think this whole, you know, Lonzo Voldemort thing is it actually going to have the reverse effect where it like gets into opponents' heads that they want to destroy this guy so badly that they don't focus on the team game like they usually will?
I guess there's the potential for that. I would hope not, because we're talking about a lot of people who are professionals who have been in the game for a while, have experience. You would hope that they wouldn't get so caught up in the personal matchups, even though we know these guys have a lot of pride and have ego and are competitive. Mm-hmm. But it does happen from time to time. I don't want to put a lot of it on John Wall. I think the Wizards all game, just you could feel it. They let the Lakers hang around, and that's always dangerous with these young teams. You know, they just never put them away. And the game comes around, and Kuzma has no conscience, so he doesn't care. He's going to shoot. You know, Brandon Ingram actually had a few nice drives. One that almost looked completely out of control right at the end of the fourth quarter, but hey, he got the tap in. So, yeah, you just, I don't know. It's kind of funny if that's what's happening, kind of playing off of the testosterone in the league.
Right.
but I don't know. Hopefully that doesn't become a thing.
Yeah, knock on wood, because, I mean, the Wizards, they really gave that game away. They should have blown them out pretty considerably, but Wall just did not have his best stuff that night. So it's just something worth monitoring moving forward, especially if, you know, Voldemort hypes up a particular matchup, which I'm sure he's going to now, because his prediction that the Lakers weren't going to lose another game this week has so far come true.
Well, there's an easy solution.
What's that?
Honestly, it's that when NBA players target Lonzo, they should only target him defensively.
Mm.
And then just run their game like they used to do offensively. Like, if John had just asserted himself as he did defensively, mm-hmm. and, you know, cut the way that he used to and be the normal playmaker that he used to, then that's a beating right there, and a significant one at that.
Yeah.
So it's all about the mindset going in. Don't try to dominate Lonzo Ball on both ends. Mm-hmm. Look, he's already a horrid defender, so if you start to overthink it,
right,
that's when you mess up. So just play your game and then step it up defensively.
Yeah.
You know, problem solved.
Right. And I mean, it's worth noting too that for much of the night, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was guarding Wall. So right. It's like there were a couple drives in transition where Ball did get matched up on Wall, and like Wall could have passed to an open guy, but it seemed like he really wanted to like dunk on Lonzo's head. So it makes me wonder, but we'll see. You know, Patrick Beverley, I feel like, got that first taste of dominating him, and maybe everyone else wants a piece now too, but it's something worth keeping an eye on as we move forward here. The other...
Well, I mean...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Just one note here, because after the game, LeVar started talking about, you know, stats don't matter, wins matter, which I agree with on the surface, but, you know, Lonzo has a true shooting percentage of 37.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for the season. So, I mean, my point is, that's not going to be sustainable. They're not going to be a 500 ball club if your leading Minuteman has a true shooting percentage of 37. Like, that has to be an outlier.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to be the norm. So, I mean, it'll level off. Teams always have these weird records early on in the season.
Yeah.
And it comes back. So it averages out just like jump shooting. So I think you still need to target Ball a lot because he has the ball in his hands for so long stretches, and he's the clear cut minute leader on the team. So the more he's out there and the more you can make him a non-factor on both ends of the court, the better.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you still have to target him. Obviously you just have to do it with logic.
Yeah.
Instead of raw emotion.
Right. That makes total sense. The other big story from the last couple days, Boogie made his return to the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, baby.
he without Anthony Davis. So if you play daily fantasy basketball and you did not have Boogie in your lineup last night, congratulations on just giving away money. He ended the night 41 points, 23 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 threes, 1 steal, 1 block in 44 minutes.
and two middle fingers.
Two gigantic middle fingers. Sarah, what did you think of, I mean, Boogie and then the Pelicans as a whole? Because they were down, I think, by 15-plus pretty early in the game. And for them to come back without Davis, what do you think that says about them for the, you know, moving forward?
You know, what's funny is, excuse me, I expected the Kings to win that game. I mean, before the game started, before, mm-hmm. yeah, they went up by a bunch. Because I just didn't have any faith in, I figured Boogie would go off, but I didn't think anyone else would really help. And all throughout the game, on TNT, they kept showing the audio assist or whatever they call it, and Gentry kept saying, hey, we're going to come through this. This is a test. Just hang in there. And I'm like, you know, there's no way. But, you know, to their credit, they did hang in there. And not only was Cousins incredible, but Jameer Nelson just started popping threes the whole time they were down. And, you know, before you know it, end of the game happens and they are right there. So it's a good sign for them. I don't think that it really means that much in terms of their future success for the year, because unfortunately they still just don't have a lot to work with. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe, you know, they get some guys back healthy. I know we're not super optimistic about what Rondo's going to do, but, you know, maybe they can scrape together a few wins, but I don't think it's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, I unless Boogie is able to continue churning out 40-25 games on a regular basis, which I don't think he will do, the style of play they won with last night will not be sustainable. That said, more Jameer Nelson, I mean, mm-hmm. 18 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, 4 threes in 36 minutes. He just joined the team last week, and he's already, you know, with Davis on the shelf, is he the third best player on the Pelicans? Like, did his addition make you higher on the Pelicans moving forward?
Initially, it didn't, because I thought his age would show eventually. Mm-hmm. But so far, so good. Is he the new Jamal Crawford? Like, a guy who's going to play until he just can't play anymore. Like, he just doesn't care.
His only role is to get buckets.
Well, we talked about they needed a ball handler and someone who could initiate the offense and hit open shots and play. I'm going to borrow a word I used earlier, logical basketball. Mm. Jameer Nelson is a guy who plays logically and calculated. So that sort of setting is probably one that is very much needed, because when Rondo returns, it's going to be more erratic. It's going to be a lot of these weird looks where he has like 8 feet of space and is not launching a three-pointer. Mm-hmm. So Jameer is the type of guy who takes what the defense gives and makes the most out of it. Like, if it's a driving lane, he'll go in there, and if the double team comes, he'll shove it on. So there's so many ways that he can kill you. It just has to be in the right dose. You don't want to overwork Jameer, especially at that age, either. So if he is your third best player, you sure as hell don't act like it. Then right. You make sure that he is like the fourth or fifth component.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and hopefully, I mean, once Davis comes back, he's obviously no longer the third best player. Like, they still have Boogie, Davis, Holiday. Rondo should be back within the next couple
hopefully
weeks.
Hopefully next season.
In theory, within the next couple weeks. I mean, they just need NBA players at this point. Like, I know you're low on Rondo, but, you know, having a backcourt rotation of Rondo, Holiday, Jameer Nelson, that's better than what they were dealing with before.
Like, right, but I'm low because they need shooting.
Yeah, right. But Nelson...
That's the problem.
Nelson is at least... in a very small sample, suggesting that he can provide that.
Yep.
Like,
so when Davis is back and everyone is healthy, do you start Nelson and then slide Drew to the two?
Well, that was their plan with Rondo anyway.
Yeah.
Like, they always planned on playing Drew at the two.
All right, so the plan was for him to stay at the two and then have Rondo. Okay, so I would just make the substitution of putting Jameer in there. I think mm-hmm. the offensive symmetry would be so much better. And frankly, you're not losing much defensively. Rondo has become a train wreck on the other end of the court. He is not the defender that he used to be at all. So I wouldn't worry about it.
It makes me wonder if we're going to see some like truly wacky lineups where it's like Boogie Davis, big front court, and then three guard backcourt of Rondo, Drew, and Jameer Nelson.
Like, why not?
Yeah.
Honestly.
Right, your wings suck so much, you might as well.
Yeah.
Might as well try it out, at least.
Hell, the Bulls use Quincy Pondexter as their backup power forward these days. I mean, it's crazy, but
yeah,
the league has gone so small, and all this positionless basketball. I mean,
right.
Why not?
Yeah,
why not? And the size that they give up, like DeMarcus and AD,
right?
They more than make up for it.
Exactly.
So, I wouldn't mind that at all.
Yeah, it's something worth monitoring moving forward. Last quick note before we get into our surprises: Tony Parker seems to be nearing a return, Sarah. He's going to the G League for a rehab stint. We talked last time about, you know, DeJounte Murray's playing really well to start the season. Any thoughts on, you know, what has your opinion changed at all about what they're going to do when Tony comes back, or are you still just wait and see at this point?
You totally, totally baited me into that. That we're just going to be talking about, oh, Tony looks like he's ready to come back soon. Yay. And then you had to turn it on me.
Yeah.
My opinion has not changed.
Okay.
I don't know what they're going to do.
It's been 3 days, Brian.
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. But, you know, like I said, good problems to have. So.
Yeah. We'll keep an eye on that, too. So let's go into our early season surprises and disappointments now. Worth noting, I mean, it should go without saying, but just in case you are going to come into our mentions and yell at us for something about a 5-game sample size, still a really small sample size. We know. We're aware as well, but you have to work with what we've been given. So, you know, we have a week and a half worth of data. We're going to talk about whether some of these things we expect them to last throughout the season, or if we just think they're, you know, the small sample size anomaly that they might appear to be.
I actually have a big problem with your setup, Ryan, because a disappointment can be a surprise as well.
Yeah.
So
right.
Calling it surprises and disappointments, that just doesn't function.
We could just call it surprises, both positive and negative, if you'd rather go that route. But I mean,
yes, let's go technical and unfun.
Yeah.
That's how we roll anyway.
Some of the disappointments, I would argue, most of them are actually surprising disappointments. So however you want to think of it. But more, I figured you want to just lead this off by boasting about the Brooklyn Nets.
No,
I think I've done that plenty.
Okay.
They're 3-2. They just beat the Cavs.
Yeah.
And it looks like that you're going to be eating your words. That's more or less what I have to say.
I mean, we talked about it last time. They have a very easy stretch coming up. They play the Knicks Friday. They've got 2 games against the Suns within the next 2 weeks. But the Suns actually...
Yeah, then it gets hard after that.
Yeah, the Suns actually remembered how to play basketball since firing Earl Watson. So those games aren't necessarily as easy as they looked. They also get the Lakers. They've got 2 against the Nuggets, who are in complete disrepair, as we'll talk about shortly. But then, yeah, after that, it's like at Portland, at Utah, versus Boston, versus Utah, versus Golden State, at Cleveland, versus Portland, at Memphis, at Houston. That is a murderer's row. So
it is.
Even if the Nets get off to like 6-4, 7-3, I think by the end of November, we'll see just how seriously it takes them.
Yeah, but thank goodness, though, they still play in the East, because even if they get slaughtered by those guys, they can still beat up on the lesser teams.
That's
so,
yeah.
Like, you had them, you made the claim that 25, that's like a positive surprise.
Yeah, once Jeremy Lin went down, yes.
Yeah, once Jeremy went down, it was 25. I'm sticking it out at 35. So if they win 30... are we just going to shake hands and call it a tie?
I think that's a gentleman's agreement. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Okay. I also want to shout out the Orlando Magic. Their only loss actually came against the Brooklyn Nets, I believe. They are 3-1. They pounded Cleveland. We talked about last time. They had a good opening season win against Miami. They snuck by Brooklyn Tuesday night on the back of 41 points from Aaron Gordon. It's, you know, it's just amazing. Like, how many times last year did we say, Like, man, I bet Aaron Gordon would be really good if he plays the four full time. And look what happens. You put Aaron Gordon at the four full time, and Nikola Vucevic doesn't have to contend with two other front court players. And all of a sudden, those two guys are having career years. Who would have seen it coming? Like, I almost don't want to give the Magic too much credit because, like, they did the thing they should have done 2 years ago. Like, I'm happy they did it. Better late than never. But, like, congratulations. You figured out a very easy solution to something you should have realized back in, like, February of 2016 when you first put Aaron Gordon at the four after the All-Star break and he exploded. And then you traded for Serge Ibaka, God knows why. And, you know, now you're in this position. But kudos to the Magic. They get Sarah there against your Spurs on Friday. Their upcoming schedule is not all that intimidating. It's at Charlotte, at New Orleans, at Memphis, versus Chicago, versus Boston, versus Knicks, at Phoenix. So, like the Nets, they have a chance to actually go on a pretty good run. You know, start the season somewhere 7-4 or whatever. But then, like the Nets, come mid-November, at Denver, at Golden State, at Portland, versus Utah, versus Indiana, at Minnesota, at Boston, at Philly. like the Nets, we will see how seriously to take them by the end of November. But right now, kudos to them. There's always one team that comes out of nowhere and emerges as a playoff contender. It's looking like the Magic could potentially be that team if Aaron Gordon continues playing at this level. So,
or it could be a four-game sample size.
Right, exactly. So we'll see. But if nothing else, I'm glad Aaron Gordon's finally having the breakout year that we expected, and I'm glad he did not sign an extension, that, you know, a low-ball extension with the Magic. That dude, if he keeps this up all year, that dude is getting bank next summer. Probably a max deal, as well he should. Sarah, who's jumped out to you?
Well, the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
For me, I don't think any of us had them in the playoffs, right?
Which, nope.
Like I said, obviously it's really early, but for me, they were probably the biggest question mark, like the toughest one. Every time I came back to them when I was trying to make my preseason rankings, I just couldn't really put my finger on them. It's hard to put a team with Marc Gasol and Mike Conley out of the playoffs, but they just had so many question marks. You know, Tyreek, we know he's capable of doing some good things for him, but we just didn't know what it would look like. And they still have question marks, is the crazy thing. I mean, JaMychal Green went down, I think, after one game. McLemore hasn't played yet, I think. So there's some potential there for them to look even better in a little while. But Marc Gasol's been terrific, which isn't really a surprise. But their bench, to me, has been a surprise. I think they're fourth right now in plus minus as a bench.
Wow.
Which could be huge. So, I mean, they've got, I think, the rookie Dylan Brooks playing really well. Tyreek has played well. Chalmers, I told y'all before the season, that's the one thing I was excited about, is he looked good in Memphis before he got hurt. And I was glad that he was able to come back because he really fits in well there. So, go ahead, Memphis.
Yeah, I mean, when we had Matt Moore on the podcast before the season started, we did that conference standings predictions, and he talked us all into Memphis a little more than I think. You're right that none of us had them as a playoff team, but he kept being like, "What? Why not? They only lost two, like, 35-year-olds, and they added, like, as you said, they added some interesting bench pieces. They still have Conley and Gasol. I was saying this to a friend last night who's a Grizzlies fan, like, they're one Conley or Gasol injury away from just completely falling apart, but aside from, like, the Warriors, what team is that not true for?
I was just going to say, that's true of everybody pretty much.
Right.
So.
Like, if LeBron goes down, the Cavs are a 25-win team. It's like...
Well, the Spurs.
Yeah, right, I guess. Well,
I mean, as long as Greg Popovich doesn't go down with a hip injury, they're going to be okay.
I was going to say if LaMarcus goes down as well and Kawhi's still out, but then Pau Gasol probably turns into a 30-point-per-game scorer.
You know that something will be adjusted and things will just work out. Yeah. So.
Right. The Spurs do not count as an early-season surprise. They are 4-0, but of course they are because they're the goddamn Spurs, and this is what they do. It doesn't matter who they play. And who they trot out there, they just continue to win 60 games every year. God.
And Dejounte Murray should start for like the rest of his career.
Well, I guess, Sarah, we should shout out Danny Green. You were telling us about him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't remember if we were recording last time, but like he's playing lights out right now.
Yeah, he is. He looks really, really comfortable putting the ball on the floor, which has not been true pretty much his entire career. People have whined and moaned about it and begged him, please learn how to dribble. And I mean, he has slowly, gradually, you know, added a dribble here and there. But the leap over last season to this is pretty impressive. He no longer is limited to just maybe a one or two dribble pull up. He can get to the rim. He's finishing with left-handed finishes, as it were. It's really, really fun to watch. So absolutely, if he continues this, and really it's not a thing that should come and go. Like, he's still going to have those kind of awkward, indecisive drives that happens, but you know, you don't just go from being uncomfortable to comfortable and back again. So he looks good, and he should definitely get like the most improved player award. I don't think it doesn't usually go to guys like Danny, and I don't think it will even if he continues this, but he deserves at least a few votes or some kind of recognition, because he definitely added something to his game that has been a vulnerability for most of his career, and you just don't often see that.
Yeah, right. It's going to end up going to a guy like D'Angelo Russell or Gary Harris or Miles Turner, who like just increase their scoring output because they have additional opportunities. But yeah,
it's kind of a shame, because it's not really about improvement. Like, Russell has been good, you know.
Right.
It's just
right.
Like you said, different opportunity.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Lakers just condemned him to Lakerland for the first 2 years.
Well, I mean, Danny has been a lot better as well, though. Like, let's be fair, these last two seasons, I would say that, I would argue at least, that he was in a slump, a two-season slump. He was a lot better in 14-15 and the years prior. He was way more efficient, way more dynamic of a shooter and more aggressive offensively. Mm-hmm. And then he just had 2 years where he just could not find his stroke. He could not get into the rhythm of the offense. And now he can. And so, like, we're looking at a 27-year-old Danny Green again, and we're going, oh, haven't seen this guy in a while. So while I get what you're saying, and he definitely has improved his dribble drives, and that is noteworthy, I think his production now is very similar to that of, you know, three seasons ago, which probably should eliminate him from contention. But I hear what you're saying, that that one element, the fact that he has now learned how to dribble, it just changes everything for the Spurs.
Yeah, it's so, more about that aspect. Because, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because he has always been valuable. So I want to make sure I make that point known. I'm definitely not saying that he hasn't been, like, you know, 3-and-D guys don't grow on trees. Right. And you can see, you know, just looking at Roberson, who is a guy who I like, but, you know, the fact of when you can only play that one end, how much it limits the team. But Danny has always been a shooter and has always been a terrific defender. He's just added that one more component that I think really they've needed. I mean, we talk about how great LaMarcus has been to start the year, but with Kawhi out, they've needed Danny to score a little more, and he's done it.
God bless the Spurs. They can really, like, Joffrey LaVerne's turned into an NBA player again. It just doesn't matter. As we were saying before we started, that they need to pick up KJ McDaniels, who Martin and I both believe is still an NBA player, even though I think, like, five teams that he's been on do not feel the same way.
Seriously, KJ McDaniels, I was so high on him. I still am to some degree. If he went to the Spurs and he worked with Chip on his jump shot, like, forget about it.
Yeah. Him and Kawhi together would be not fun for, say, the Golden State Warriors. But Mort, anyone else jumping out to you as a surprise so far? A good surprise, I should say.
Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, 26 a game, shooting 44 from downtown, and on high volume, no less, 6 attempts per game. Hit the game winner against, or the buzzer beater even, not just the game winner, the buzzer beater three-pointer against Portland.
Yep.
I mean, he is looking real good, and you know, the Clips are undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
I was not high on LA. I think I actually convinced myself that they were not in the playoffs.
Mm.
Or if they were, it was a very, very low seed.
Mm-hmm.
But they are looking competent. I mean, they're beating teams by almost 20 points a game. They're rebounding well. DeAndre is averaging 18 boards, so that makes sense. And they don't turn the ball over.
Mm-hmm.
They are the number one team in the league in not turning the ball over. Mm. Only 13 turns a game.
I mean, I guess because Patrick Beverley's always been a guy who protects the ball well.
Yep.
And, you know, we made fun of Doc Rivers over the summer for saying, you know, like they asked him what was going to change with Chris Paul no longer on your team. And he said, ball movement. We're going to move the ball more. But, like, without a guy like Chris Paul who's going to dribble the ball up the court every single time, like, I haven't looked at the data, but I'm assuming they have been moving the ball more. It seems like, you know, we all wanted to see a little more Point Blake. Like, he's doing it. I would say, you know, the last two seasons, both of which he started pretty well, it was just like the one season he broke his hand by punching the guy in the face, and that kind of derailed that campaign. So, like, he's had this type of well-rounded ability. I think the big surprise for me is the three-point shooting. Like, he hadn't taken, prior to last season, he had not taken more than 44 three-point attempts in a season. He took 113 last year. He's already at 23 through four games. Like, he took 18 in 2015-2016. He only played 35 games, but he took 18 the entire year. He is 10 of 23 right now, shooting 43.5%. Sure, that type of shooting percentage is probably unsustainable, but the fact he added that to his game, it's much like a lot of the other guys, like Brook Lopez, like DeMarcus Cousins, like Marc Gasol, who have all added that, even Al Horford, added that in the last year or two. Like, that turns them from, like, I wonder what these are like traditional big men. Like, what role do they have in the NBA today? Oh, shit, they could shoot three-pointers. Oh, they're just, like, all-around dominant forces. Okay, cool. Mm. Like, if this... that's the thing I'm most curious to see with Blake. Is that three-point shooting, is that going to translate moving forward? Or is it just, like, has he just gotten on a hot streak to start the year?
And while on the subject of three-point shooting and the Clippers, they're doing all this with Danilo Gallinari shooting 23.8% from behind the arc and generally struggling from the field, as well as Austin Rivers, another guy who's averaging over 30 minutes a game, and he is not even breaking 36% from the field. So they aren't overly efficient, and they're still winning.
Mm-hmm.
When those guys bounce back a little bit and things even out, good Lord.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm glad you brought the Clippers up because they definitely deserved a shout-out. You actually mentioned a little while ago the Detroit Pistons, who I think deserve a shout-out. And, I mean, the Sixers pretty handily beat them the other night, but Tobias Harris is absolutely killing it to start the year. And Andre,
that Sixers comment just had to be there.
I mean, it's their one win so far. You got to give me something. But Andre Drummond too, like, after the Sixers game, Embiid put him on blast for not playing defense. And yes, if you go on Twitter I saw someone tweeted it, I think it was James Hollis. There was just a YouTube clip of all the times he didn't play defense against the Sixers. So that's still a concern, in terms of his effort, but he's hit 13 of 18 free throws so far this year. Like, again, super small sample, but, like, he's a career 38.4% free throw shooter, and he's shooting 72% from the line this year. So if that's sustainable, I feel a lot better about my Detroit in the playoffs prediction, because that's going to change a lot, not only about his outlook moving forward, but the team as a whole. Like, you can't, you know, maybe if he starts getting, like, Hack a Drummond at the end of games, maybe that gets into his head. Maybe he turns back into the free throw pumpkin that he was. But if you can't hack him anymore intentionally, he's going to be able to stay on the floor at the end of games, which isn't a luxury that Stan Van Gundy had earlier in his career. So that's something I'm going to be watching closely moving forward, because, yeah, this Detroit team, yes, they lost to the Sixers, but, like, they've been playing relatively well other than that. Like, Tobias Harris, what the hell? Did you see this coming?
What's more sustainable? Andre Drummond hitting 72% from the line, or Tobias Harris hitting 47% from behind the arc?
Neither. Is that an option?
Yeah. Exactly. No, but yeah, Tobias Harris, you got to give him credit. He's hot right now. Yeah. He's on a roll. It's going to quiet down a little bit, but 23 and a half a game. This is what we wanted to see out of him to some extent, because I have found one number that is pretty troubling when I looked at his line. He's averaging just 1.8 free throw attempts per game.
Mm.
So everything is perimeter oriented, which has a low chance of sustaining, because if you can't get to the line and hit a high percentage and beef up that efficiency, your jump shot is certainly not going to do it for you over 82 games. So he is going to quiet down a bit, but I'm digging the fact that he's looking aggressive and that he's taking over this sort of alpha male scoring role that Reggie Jackson previously had, because Reggie Jackson is simply not that good, to be quite honest with you. Tobias always had more potential anyway, and now he seems to be digging into it. And what is he, 25? I think I want to say 24, yeah, 25. 25. Yeah.
Yeah, he's 25. Still really young.
He's really young, and I mean, he came in and sort of played a power forward role as well. So if we assume that he came into the league and looked at himself as a big and had to adjust on the fly and become more of a perimeter player, then now might actually be the time where we can consider him fully developed, or, you know, starting his prime. And who knows, maybe he turns it around. I'm not entirely sure that he's going to be like an all-star type player, but if he could be like a 20-5 guy, that's fine. That's totally fine, especially for Detroit. Good Lord, they need it.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, Jackson has been playing better than he did last year, which doesn't say much, but, you know, he's been fine. Avery Bradley is doing the same old Avery Bradley things. He's shooting, you know, almost 15 points a game, 1.5 threes.
Not rebounding 6 times a game, though.
Well, yeah, because you have Andre Drummond there.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't need to. But, like, this Pistons team, Stanley Johnson, will be interesting to see if he can get going offensively, only shooting 33.3% so far. And Stan Van Gundy actually recently talked up for Henry Ellenson, so he might start getting a little bit more burn. But
I was waiting for Henry to get some minutes last year.
Yeah, it seems like he might be on the precipice this time.
Yeah, he was like, what, 8th? Drafted 8th?
Or
9th, maybe?
Wasn't he?
Oh, wait, is that late?
Wasn't he? Yeah,
he was, you're right, 18th. Oh, in my head, I had him much higher, apparently. No. Okay.
Stanley Johnson was 8th.
Oh yeah, there we go. But still, like, he was pretty highly regarded coming out of Marquette, so I was kind of curious as to why he didn't get any more minutes, but yeah. So should we have you on suicide watch if Stanley Johnson becomes a bust?
Why?
Because you've mentioned him a lot.
Oh. I mean, I still have faith in him, but I have faith in a lot of forwards who can't shoot, apparently. It's just, I guess that's the market that I've quartered. Justice Winslow, so Brandon Ingram,
Markelle Fultz. Oh!
Okay. All right. Sarah, any other surprises stand out to you? Positive surprises?
Well, just going back to the Grizzlies, I didn't mention they are currently number one in free throw attempts.
Damn.
So that's just something to keep an eye on. It's really interesting. Between Mike and Mark, they're averaging 16 a game.
Wow.
So, yeah. And they're number one also in opponents' points in the paint, which I expect them to stay around that probably. Yeah. But we'll see if they're able to maintain the free throw attempts.
That's a good... Wow. God. Grizzlies. Always. They're like the poor man's Spurs. They're just...
They really are similar, honestly. They do. They get a lot out of these guys that other teams maybe wouldn't take a chance on.
Yeah. But so before we move on to the flip side of positive surprises, I do want to shout out the Boston Celtics for bouncing back from the Gordon Hayward injury. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are both playing out of their minds, and they both look like legitimate building blocks moving forward. It pains me to say that because I want nothing more for the Celtics than to just totally collapse, but it's looking like that isn't going to happen. Kudos to Kyrie for not blowing his knee out on the Milwaukee Bucks court that he thought was from the 70s yesterday. Good job, Kyrie. Way to go.
Can we talk about Kyrie for a quick second here? It's been five
as
games.
As a positive or negative surprise?
Yeah, probably negative at this point.
There we go. So let's transition to that.
But again, I mean, it's five games. Right. So, you know, hashtag Celtics Twitter ease off.
Right.
But, I mean, when you give up the amounts that you give up for him, like, that was a huge package. Definitely. And you were hoping for him to turn into, like, a legitimate superstar. Like, a tier one level player. So far, he's looked like the same old Kyrie, but with more steals.
Yeah.
And even a little bit less scoring-wise.
Right. And very middling efficiency.
Yeah. Like, it's just... I was skeptical when the trade was made because I don't think Kyrie had that, you know, the higher tier in him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he is a tier one superstar. I don't think he'll ever be one. And clearly, Boston thought otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, it seems like he's just like the same guy as before, which isn't utterly encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, he did play really well in the win against the Bucks Thursday. Probably his best game in a Celtics uniform. So... as he gets more comfortable, you know, I'm sure it's like, it's probably really hard for all of those guys. Cause I'm sure they spent an entire training camp and preseason, like developing this offensive system with Kyrie and Gordon Hayward. And now Gordon Hayward's gone and they have to adjust on the fly. And like, you know, I doubt Jason Tatum saw a huge amount of minutes with that first unit. So like they're all still getting used to each other, but yeah, I mean, the early returns have not been what you would hope for if you were a Celtics fan. I mean, I still have faith that he's going to... I'm with you, Mort. I don't think he's the as you said, the tier one superstar. Like, he's not LeBron, Steph, KD, Giannis. He's not on that level.
Right.
Kawhi. Sorry, Sarah.
A damn good player, though. I mean, I'm not trying to knock Kyrie.
Right.
I mean, he's talented as hell.
Yeah,
but
he's like...
yeah.
I'd put him on the same level as, like, a Damian Lillard. I don't think he's...
the exact same name I was sitting
with. Like, I don't think... I would put John Wall above him, but, like, I mean, Dame's a really good player. That's not, like, that's not an insult to those guys. It's just, like, Dame, like Kyrie, is mostly offense. Like, you're not getting a huge amount out on defense. And if we start to see that, I mean, he had a steal in every one of his games so far. He's averaging 2.2 a game. He did get a block against Milwaukee too. If we start to see more of that moving forward, you know, then it becomes interesting.
What I think is an interesting debate, and we shouldn't have that now, we should table that for a later episode, is we should try to pinpoint exactly what would be the necessary output for him, not just statistically but also playing wise, for that deal to be justified.
I
think that could be fun, like a fun thought experiment.
I don't want to play that game because then we're gonna have to do it with Markelle Fultz too. That would be we could definitely do that at some point. All right, Sarah, what early season disappointments have stood out to you?
Well, it's one that you had on the outline, but it's not... it's a disappointment, but it's not a surprise to me. It would be the Wolves and the Wolves defense specifically. I honestly didn't expect much more than this, at least not yet. Just last year, the lack of improvement that we saw did not have me super optimistic about this year. Obviously, we're all thinking logically, okay, you know, it's year two of Tibbs. You're adding Taj and Jimmy Butler. hopefully they can teach these young guys about how to defend. And it's still really early, so that may happen. But I just really, really not that optimistic at the moment. If it's going to happen this year, it's going to take some time.
Mm-hmm. So I know you said you didn't have super high hopes. Did you think it would be this bad? Like, they are, not only are they dead last in the league in defensive efficiency, but they're allowing 114 points per 100 possessions. Mm-hmm. Indiana is the next closest team at 110.3. So they're nearly 4 points per 100 possessions worse than the second worst team in the NBA. Like, they are truly egregiously bad right now at defense.
And they're giving up 26 three-point attempts for opponents making 40%, almost 41% of those per game. Yeah, they're just bad all around, like you said. I don't know if I thought it would be this bad, but, I mean, two of your key guys, you got Cat and Wiggins, who just really are not there defensively yet. They're not even close.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had Jimmy Butler out for two games. So, right. Yeah, it makes sense. Really, when you think about it, it's pretty sad to be dead last. You would hope that there were some teams that could be a little further down behind them, but they're going to have to really focus on it. And hopefully that this is a wake-up call of, look, we can't just care about scoring. And I told you guys when the Wolves were here for opening night in San Antonio, I thought that Towns was engaged. He wasn't particularly good, but he cared. So, you know, as long as they keep along those lines, there should be improvement. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And it should be noted that in the two games that Butler has been out, they lost by 23 in the first one and 21 in the second one. Yeah. So, yeah, that goes to show the level of importance Tips sort of incorporated into the schemes in training camp, I think, with Butler. Mm-hmm. Like, now you probably are trying to substitute what he does with Wiggins, who I could imagine doesn't have a clue. I mean, let's be honest. So, yeah, they need him back immediately. And, like, Butler himself has not had a good start to the season.
Right.
But I figured out why, because I went back to look at a lot of tape. And he has these different modes. And one of them is, you know, the playmaking part, where he is really trying to integrate himself in terms of passing the ball and making sure everybody touches it. And then he has the F you, I'm taking over mode.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not reached that second stage at any point. He's trying to feel himself out a lot. And he's trying to be like a piece of the puzzle instead of being like the main piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
So he needs to readjust himself when he comes back. Like, they are looking at him to be the leader, and he's trying like to defer a little bit, like, oh, I have talent right now. I don't remember what that's like. Right. So here you go.
Right.
I mean, shoot. Wow, Karl Anthony Towns. I have a big who can score 25 points a game. This is weird. Oh, I have a wing player who can score 25 points a game. This is really weird. I have a point guard who can shoot jump shots. Nudge, Derrick Rose. I mean, I get it. I get that there's an adjustment period for him too. But when he comes back, he has to take a mindset with him that is just take no prisoners.
Yeah. So I want to ask about Towns in particular more, because I've seen a lot of Twitter panic about him.
Yes.
Is it too early to be concerned about his defense, or is there actual reason to wonder? You know, again, he's super young. It takes bigs a long time often to really start to figure out NBA defense. So I'm not saying he's right, like, never going to get it, but like, Is there reason to worry about him this season just being totally lost on defense?
Normally, I would say no because of the age, and I'm still inclined to say that. But here's the thing. I think he looks regressed as a defender. I actually think he looked a little bit better last year.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't looked at the advanced numbers because of the two blowouts. I think that skews everything off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But he's looked horrid defensively this year. Like, he is a fish out of water and deer in the headlights and whatever you want to throw at it. It's just, he looks lost.
Yeah.
And whether that's because of all the notes that's probably coming to him from Tibbs and Jimmy and Taj, I'm not sure. I do think that he'll eventually get there. His mechanics are, you know, in terms of reading rotations and whatnot, I mean, he's just too smart of a basketball player, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying to say. And look, he's already mastered scoring inside, outside, at the free throw line. He's mastered rebounding. He is a terrific dribbler for a guy his size. So, like, let's give him a little space.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a luxury you have when you can offer something in that many different areas. Whereas Wiggins, who couldn't rebound, who couldn't pass, who could primarily just attack the basket. That's why I'm harder on Wiggins than I am Towns, mm-hmm. by the way.
Yeah. Well, that makes total sense.
Yeah. So I'm concerned if he's regressed. That's my concern. I'm not concerned if he just is a bad defender,
mm-hmm.
because I'll live with that because of his age. But if it goes backwards, right. then fuck yeah, right. I'm concerned.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, it's hard not to get a little bit of Andre Drummond vibes right now. But again, yeah. super early. Well,
yeah, 90% of the line.
Right, right.
Though.
No, right, so, right, right. I'm just saying yeah. defensively. Offensively, right. it's not even, I mean, yeah. you can't even compare the two.
But could you imagine George Hill instead of Jeff Teague?
Yeah, I know. We hated that Jeff Teague fit from the start.
Yeah.
Yep. And nothing has changed my mind in that regard.
No.
I mean, hell, even Ricky Rubio instead of Jeff Teague. Like, I know the shooting concerns, but...
Yeah.
Like, Ricky's playing really well in Utah right now. We should have shouted him out as an early season good surprise, but frankly, I'm not surprised that he's playing well. I thought he was going to have a great year, and so far he is.
Well, we thought that Teague would produce more offensively. That was the key. Like, right now, he looks timid himself. Like, he's only taking 2 threes a game in 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, he's taking... Oh my god, he's taking 9.4 shots overall.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he needs to raise that up at least 5 shots.
Yeah. In no world should Jamal Crawford be averaging more shot attempts than Jeff Teague on this team.
Oh, good lord, he is. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, that's, you know, typical tips, of course. Like, I had a feeling Jamal Crawford was going to be taking a bunch of shots on this team. But, yeah, Jeff Teague. There's something is like a little off with Minnesota, and like they have a lot of new pieces. Jimmy Butler's been out for 2 games. I don't think, you know, I'm still feeling comfortable projecting them to make the playoffs. That win against OKC the other night was extremely impressive, but man, without Butler, like to get clobbered by Indiana and Detroit, like at what? I mean, these weren't close games. Like they had 2 good wins against Utah and OKC with Butler. But then without him, he just got spanked twice. And, you know, I hope Jimmy comes back soon. That's all I'm going to say there.
Oh, yeah.
I want to ask you about Brandon Ingram, another forward who people are really down on and who, you know, the shooting stroke just has not translated yet from college. Where do you stand on him? Because I'm seeing some Lakers fans in my timeline, you know, already, especially with D'Angelo Russell breaking out in Brooklyn. I'm seeing a lot of people saying, damn, I wish we traded Brandon Ingram in that package to Brooklyn instead of D'Angelo Russell. Do you think, is it time to jump ship on the Brandon Ingram can still be an all-star train?
Well, it seems like Lakers fans jump ship in terms of their opinion of him whenever he has a good or bad game. Because when he had 19 and 10,
right.
I mean, he was the most awesome thing since sliced bread. Then he had 7 and 2, and he was like, oh, we should just, you know, cut his ass, send him to the D League. Then he had 25 against Phoenix in the win, and they were like, oh, rejoice, he's going to be Kevin Durant. So,
right.
I mean, look, he's young, he's going to be inconsistent, but let's not lose sight of the fact that he's averaging 16 and 5,
mm-hmm.
and plus 3 assists right now. So the raw stats are coming along somewhat nicely. His shooting percentages still needs to increase, but he's getting to the line now, and he's hitting free throws. So, yeah, I mean, is he a complete player? No, not at all. He needs to tighten up his handle. He needs to, you know, probably learn to coexist with other players in schemes, because sometimes he goes off on these solo adventures mm-hmm. that doesn't really work out for him. But he's 20, right? 20? Yeah, just turned 20 even.
Yeah.
I probably would have sent him to Brooklyn instead of D'Angelo, but that's because I'm higher on D'Angelo.
Mm-hmm.
That does not mean that I'm necessarily down on Ingram.
Right.
I don't think he's going to be the guy that we all thought he was going to be when he was drafted, mm-hmm. but he could still be pretty damn good.
Well, I think even when he got drafted, we poured cold water pretty quickly on the Kevin Durant comparisons, right? Like, we were not thinking he had that type of upside. I still think he's going to be a good two-way player. Like, as you said, he's 20 yeah. years old. I mean, they're still listing him as 190 pounds. Like, he just doesn't have the frame yet to compete.
Man, my arm weighs 190
yeah, right. pounds. Like, he's going against, put him against LeBron James. LeBron James has 60 or 70 pounds on him. Like, it's just, he's a boy yep. against men still. So as he gets older, as he fills out, I think he'll be better. Like, but, you know, it took, like, Giannis was 196 pounds when he came to the league. Now he's 230 and he looks like a Greek god. Like, it will happen for Brandon Ingram. He's got mm-hmm. the frame to fill out. He just, like, they didn't want him to add 20 pounds of muscle right away, which is smart. You don't want to risk that type of, like, sudden development to your body. It's going to take time, but I don't think...
Yeah, natural you know, progression with weight right. is what you're...
Yeah, Yeah, so I'm... I mean, it makes me, like, nothing makes me happier than Lakers fans being in a panic over him because I think it's hilarious, but I'm still holding firm on Brandon Ingram Island, if that's a thing.
The NBA podcast, we love everyone. Yeah. So just one final note on Ingram mm-hmm. in regards to the whole Kevin Durant thing, because I think it was blown out of proportion. I think what people also meant to say, at least when I made a point on a Danish podcast back when he was drafted, and where I compared him to Durant, but that was not in terms of statistical production or importance to team. That was like his physical build, mm-hmm. the way that he potentially could be able to use his length
yep.
to shoot over pretty tall players. Like, he will have some luxuries that are similar to that of Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where people are coming from primarily, I think. You know, and then some people are going to read it as, oh, are you going to say that he's going to average 32?
Right.
No.
Yeah.
No, that's not what we're saying. It's a question of look at body profiles and see the benefits that Durant has because of his body, and then apply that logic to Ingram.
Yeah.
Because if you have the same body, you have the same advantages, especially if when you have similar athletic ability, which, you know, to his credit, he does have.
Right, totally. I want to give a quick reverse shout out to the Sixers' late game execution, which has been predictably awful. They're a young team relying on young players. They're going to make dickhead mistakes late. They completely melted down against the Rockets the other night, which was hard to watch, but frankly, you saw it coming from a mile away. Like, on that final inbounds play, Alex is home, and I said it's going to be a pick and roll with Harden and Eric Gordon, and Eric Gordon's going to hit a game-winning three, and lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. These are the things that young teams, like the Sixers are not the first young team to go through these growing pains. It happens. The fact they're competing with a Houston team that's expected to be one of the top contenders in the West is a good sign. It's just, you know, these are the types of things. This is part of the process, as it were. It's just a very painful part, because now there are actual expectations on this team. So having them blow winnable games like this, I mean, you could argue, you know, they were right in there with the Washington Wizards in the season opener, too. And they kind of fell apart at the end there. So I'm not panicked yet, but I'm expecting at least like five more kick in the nuts losses like that at some point this year. Sarah, I want to ask you about the Denver Nuggets, because all of us, especially after the Paul Millsap acquisition, were pretty high on them. I think all three of us had them comfortably in the playoffs. They are 1-3. Their only win is against the Sacramento Kings. Two of their losses, a road loss to Utah in the season opener. You can explain that one away. 5-point loss at home to Washington. Again, Washington's a good team. They got blown out by 17 at Charlotte on Wednesday. What's up with Denver?
I went back to look. I had them fifth in the West.
Me too.
Very high on them.
Yeah.
I think some of it is just, you know, hiccups that can be expected with integrating Millsap. And they went through this thing the first few games. Like, Jokic wasn't shooting the ball. It was very strange. I don't know what happened there. Zach Lowe just wrote his 10 things I like and don't like that came out this morning. He mentioned that they're like, I think, 24th in pace after being 7th last year. So that's strange. Also the fact that, you know, Millsap sometimes plays inside a little bit more than they're used to. So those cutting lanes that they use to their advantage so well last year haven't always been as open. That's just something that they'll have to work out. I mean, they can get Millsap popping out more to the baseline, where he's a great shooter from like the mid-range baseline shot. Just have him out there and then, you know, run your action with Jokic on the opposite elbow. I mean, there's opportunities. I just think they're still working on it. Like we said, it's really early, and hopefully that's it. They got to stop coughing up the ball and get good looks.
Yeah. I mean, luckily for them, their next three games at Atlanta, at Brooklyn, at the Knicks, and D'Angelo Russell is set to miss Friday's night. Probably, or he's doubtful for Friday night's game. You got to wonder if he's going to be back for Sunday. So they have a chance for three relatively easy wins, or what at least on the calendar look like relatively easy wins. And then, you know, they've got a they have a 6-game home stretch right after that. So, like, they could be 4-3 going into that. There's still plenty of time. But at this point, it's like with every bad loss they suffer, it's more like just trade for Eric Bledsoe. Like, stop delaying the inevitable. Just do it. And Phoenix, you're not going to get better than Moutier and Fareed. Just deal with it. You pissed away your leverage. Like,
deal with it.
I mean, if you didn't want to, you know, if you wanted to actually get more for Eric Bledsoe, you should have traded him over the summer, or you should have not suspended him from the team effectively after he tweeted that he didn't want to be here. Like, it's gone. They have less leverage than the Knicks did in the Carmelo Anthony talks, and Carmelo Anthony had a no trade clause. Like, that's how screwed Phoenix is right now. So
he was at the hair salon.
Right. Well, actually, Bleacher Report published a very in-depth investigative feature in which one of our writers called like a bunch of Phoenix hair salons to see if he was actually there. Wow. They actually spoke with his personal barber, and his personal barber was like, "Man, why you gotta get my name into this?" Like, he
that's
was
hard hitting journalism.
I know, it really was. I'm expecting the Pulitzer at our office next week.
So regarding Denver,
yeah,
I have a much easier solution.
Okay.
And, you know, not that I'm against them trading for Eric Bledsoe, I think they should do it. But like, get Gary Harris more shots than, you know, Jamal Murray, who's shooting 29% from the field right now.
Yeah.
Could that be an idea?
Yeah.
Gary Harris is taking 10 shots a game. Jamal Murray is taking 12, and he's playing 7 minutes less a game. Maybe, just maybe, you should use your second best player a little bit more.
Right,
that would make sense.
Yeah.
That's just me trying to be logical, because Harris is, after all, shooting 48% from downtown.
Right,
and you can see this is weird. Like, Gary Harris has taken 2 3 throws in 130 minutes.
God.
So, I mean, I think it's a question of him also having to, like, you have to set him up in a way that he can get to the rim.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's athletic.
Yeah.
He's strong. Like, he's built as a tank. Why not utilize it? Just unleash Gary Harris and let him average those 17, 18 points a game, which we all know that he can.
Right.
Efficiently so. God damn, that was a hard one.
But I mean, that's how Denver used him last year when he came back. It was like right around the same time Jokic moved back into the starting lineup. Gary Harris came back. They used him as a cutter, and he just like feasted, because Jokic was just hitting him with open pass after open pass, and that, like, he's just slicing the basket, scoring easy buckets. It feels like, much like with OKC and even with Minnesota, it feels like they just have so many new pieces in the starting lineup. It's just going to take some time for them to get comfortable with one another. So, like, I'm not super panicking about any of these teams yet. I still think all three make the playoffs, and I don't think any of them are headed to like a 25 win season. It's just, you know, remember the 2010-11 Miami Heat. They started, what, 9-8 before they started to figure it out? Like, it takes time for teams with a bunch of new pieces to get chemistry, especially with a shortened preseason, shortened training camp, like they just haven't had the time to develop as we expect them to look come March or April.
Yeah, I'm panicking if Jamal Murray is shooting 10% from downtown in January, though.
Yeah, that is reasonable.
And look, we just talked about them now. Do you guys want to bet that Jamal Murray tonight is going to go out and go like 6 of 8 from range?
I hope so, man.
Yeah.
As someone who touted him as a fantasy sleeper, I'm looking like a real asshole so far. So he really, please, Jamal, make my Twitter mentions more salvageable.
To be fair, Adam Maris told us that, you know, their offense probably wasn't going to be quite as good this year, and their defense was still not going to be very good.
Yeah.
But we're stubborn and heart wants what the heart wants. Right. Like, we probably should have listened, but no.
Yes, we should have listened to the Denver expert who's around the team all the time. Yeah, in retrospect.
We had so many guests in our defense. I can't.
Right.
So many wonderful analysis, and I don't remember them all.
Yeah, that is true. Sarah, any other negative surprises and or disappointments that have stood out in the first week and a half to you?
You know what? I just wanted to jump in on the Ingram thing a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you guys basically both covered it, but, you know, okay, like you said, the percentages aren't where you want them to be. I think he's only finishing 56% of his shots in the restricted area. That's not great. But I think he has displayed some good things going to the rim this year. Some body control, the ability to finish through some contact. He's kind of got... People aren't going to like this at all, to go from the Kevin Durant body comparisons to what I'm about to throw out there. But he's kind of got this Kyle Anderson thing going on where he can finish and kind of a slow... herky-jerky thing where he just uses his length to overwhelm people. I think he's just figuring out who he is, and hopefully, you know, he's got some player development people helping him to figure that out. But there are some good signs there. You know, he's a guy, he's not super explosive, but he's learning how he can use his length to still have an advantage to get around people. You know, he's just feeling it out. And so there are good signs there. And I just think he's going to be okay. You know, he's not going to be Kevin Durant, fine. But, you know.
He's going to be Kyle Anderson.
Lakers fans are just going to burn my mentions to the ground.
I need you to write an article saying how Brandon Ingram is the next Kyle Anderson. And then the headline should just be presented proudly. Like,
that would help so much, though. That would really help him, I think. Let's bring it back down several notches.
Right. That is fair.
And he's a guy who would benefit from some shot selection, too. Like, he should really use some refinement in that area. Like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a shot with Anthony Davis right in my face. Not a good shot. a dribble handoff from Lopez where he can help me get to the top of the arc wide open. Good shot. You know, that's all right. He just has to learn that.
You make basketball sound so easy, Sarah.
It's a simple game.
Yeah,
it's a simple game.
Mort,
unless you're Dwayne Casey. And I'm going somewhere with this.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna ask if you have any other disappointments.
Oh, I do. So fire. I have one.
Yep.
So remember last season when we learned that Dwayne Casey kind of limited Jonas Valanciunas because he wanted him to dominate.
Yep.
And he wasn't seeing the court before he started dominating.
Yep.
Yep. Okay, so Valanciunas is playing 23 minutes a night right now. 23 minutes. In those 23 minutes, he's averaging 14 points, 9.5 boards, and he's shooting 52% from the field and getting to the line four times, where he's knocking down 75%. How is that not dominating? He's also only turning it over, you know, a half time per game, 0.5.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what more does Dwayne Casey need? That's ridiculous. Now I'm at the point where that's just bullshit if you use that same excuse. And I even heard the Raptors commentators. They went in on it as well. Like, no, but he has to show immediately when he's in the game that he has to be the primary factor, blah, 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 blah. Man, shut up. Shut up. You're killing this guy's trade value, which is just hurting yourself in the end. I mean, he is so much better than what the Raptors themselves are giving him credit for. I mean, you know, per 36 minutes, he's at 22 points, 15 boards. Mm-hmm. Is that not dominating?
Well, in Casey's defense, he's only played two games because he has a sprained ankle right now, so he's missed a couple.
Right,
Actually, on the Raptors' note, Kyle Lowry, rough start to the season.
Yeah.
37.5% shooting over his first four games. So, yeah. Like, to your point, if Kyle Lowry is as washed as he's looked these first couple games, they're going to need other sources of offense aside from just DeMar DeRozan. Like, Valanciunas could be that guy once he's healthy. But in the meantime, Jakob Poeltl is playing surprisingly well.
Mm-hmm. And he's probably going to be, like, you know, he's going to be the guy who's going to end up sending Valanciunas somewhere else.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So, yeah.
If they can find a taker for, I mean,
there should be so many takers out there.
You would think so. The Bulls?
Man, I mean, Robin Lopez. We flirted with that idea a couple episodes ago, didn't we? Like Robin Lopez for Jonas Valanciunas?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Right.
I mean, if they use him like this, Raptors, of course, I mean, they are murdering his trade value anyway.
Right.
So, why not? That would be for them getting a good deal.
Yeah. Any others more? I have one more.
Oh, I had one, but I didn't write it down because we were talking about it before we started recording.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't remember. Oh, yeah. So, this is just to show that I'm not a complete homer who is just in love with everyone. Donovan Mitchell is struggling.
Yep.
25% from the field. Just 29% on two-pointers. He has offensively, he's not looked good.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, you know, you're seeing defensively that he's stepping up at times. He is pulling out some plays where you can see the potential, but it's been a rough start for Donovan. So just wanted to give you the satisfaction of that.
It's not satisfaction. I want him to do well too. But yeah, he has struggled. A lot of it was he was starting when Rodney Hood was out with a calf strain. Hood is now back, so Donovan will move back into his second unit role where he should have a better chance to succeed early on. My last one is Nerlens Noel. Like, god damn. I defended this guy tooth and nail while he was in Philly. I mean, he's putting up decent numbers in limited minutes, but the Mavericks just don't want to use him. And I get that, like, Harrison Barnes works better at the four. Dirk is better suited to play the five these days, and you don't want to do Barnes, Dirk, and Noel because that's just not enough offense. But I don't know. It doesn't bode well for, you know, Nerlens reportedly turned down a massive contract extension or a contract offer this summer, took the qualifying offer instead. His early season output is not aligned with a $20 million per year player. So I hope for his sake that he gets it going. But right now it looks like he made a pretty big mistake not taking that contract offer.
Noel for Valanciunas? Or a package centered around Noel for Valanciunas?
I feel like the Mavs would have to include more because...
Yeah, right, obviously.
Yeah.
But
like the Raptors would want some assurance that Noel was staying beyond this year.
Valanciunas under Carlisle?
God, that would be fun.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah. Sarah, let's wrap things up with our crush of, I guess, the last couple days. Who's caught your eye since Tuesday?
I forgot we were going to throw the Bucks in there completely. And not really the Bucks, just some of their
offense. Yeah, their offense, right.
Yeah. But we can talk about that at a later date.
Yeah.
Let me try to say his name. Semi Ojeleye?
Sounds good to me.
For the Celtics?
Yep.
Yeah. And honestly, it was really just a glimpse of, you know, that we got to see him play the other night. Last night, I guess it was. He only played 14 minutes. He was 0-for-2 from the field. I don't care. Because, they threw him on Giannis for several possessions. And it was, like I said, brief, but it was an eye-opening little bit of brevity there. He moved his feet really, really well. Didn't give up ground. Just, it was impressive, so, defensively. And I think he's got more to show. I think he can be a solid shooter, but that all will come in time. I just, if you're able to keep Giannis out of the paint for even, like, three possessions, you deserve a shout-out.
Agreed. Yeah, he's another one of those guys where it kills me to say the Celtics have drafted well in recent years, but he looks good. Mort, how about you?
He's one of those guys that whenever I see him, like, play, I just I get this sensation of wanting to go to the gym to work out because, good Lord, I mean, that has to be the most ripped rookie coming in ever.
Yeah.
That's a strong dude. My guy is not that strong, but he plays well, so that's something. Lauri Markkanen.
Yep.
I mean, I did not want to put a bull in there, but he just forced my hand.
Yeah, he really did.
15.8 points a game, 10 rebounds, which I don't think is sustainable. He's hitting 3 triples a game, 2 NBA records, 10 threes in the first 3 games, 12 over the first 4 of his career, 12 of 30 from the season. I mean, he won the Bulls the game against Atlanta yesterday. He hit the go-ahead 3-pointer late in the 4th, I think with 48 seconds to go. Like, this dude just has some serious cojones, and he is 20 years old. Like, I followed him closely at Eurobasket. I was scouting him and Luka Doncic. Mm-hmm. And he was the main guy for Finland. He really was. And, you know, everyone was like, oh, okay, he's probably going to have, like, a good rookie season. You know, he's going to be backing up one of the leading power forwards, and he's probably going to have, like, some decent percentages and, you know, maybe 7 points, 3 rebounds a game. That would be fine as a building block. Well, shit, you can't remove this guy from the starting lineup now.
Yeah.
Like, Fred Hoiberg came out and said that he's running his offense through him. So, which isn't saying much because his offense sucks. Right? That's a different matter. I mean, let's keep it positive. But Markkanen is beasting right now. Absolutely beasting. That stroke, that is legit.
Mm-hmm. I forget. I think it was on Bloggable. It was someone. They shouted out Markkanen, but they're like, be sure not to give Garpax any credit for this, because it's going to piss them off, and they had no idea what they were getting.
That's right, because, and this is quite amazing, really, they did not even interview Markkanen beforehand.
Right.
Which is so bold. And it also came out that they had, like, a really, really small scouting staff, despite being the financial champions of the NBA year in and year out, so... Yeah, I would second that article from Bloggable. Yeah. Don't give the front office credit for this thing. This is all marketing.
Right. Yeah. I think I saw the Bulls are somehow third in attendance still this year, which just doesn't make any sense. Cause, like,
God damn it, Bulls fans.
I know. I just don't know who would pay money to actually go watch this team. But kudos to those who are still.
Drunk people is my only guess.
Or people who want to see the opposing team, but, like, who wants to go see a Bulls-Hawks game this year?
Yeah, right? Well, John Collins. Markkanen against Collins. Yeah, there you go. I like that one, though.
The future of the NBA. Song,
yeah.
All right, my guy, Jingling Joe Ingles. You know, they gave him a boatload of money this summer, presumably to lure Gordon Hayward back. That did not happen, but he's playing really well. Like, if we're talking about, you know, Kawhi, we cannot call Kawhi Leonard a 3-and-D guy because he can do so much more than that. But if we're talking about, like, quintessential 3-and-D guys, like, it's Ingles and Robert Covington are, like, who, I mean, they've got to be at least up there in terms of, like, pure 3-and-D, the best ones in the league. Because right now, through 5 games, 3 threes made, 2 steals. I mean, that's what he does. Like, it's just
15 threes made.
Well, three a game, I should say. Sorry.
And, steals at 54%.
Right. Yeah. Like, that's what this dude does. You're not gonna ask him to score 25 points. He's not going to replace Gordon Hayward by any means. He's not that type of a playmaker. He did have 6 assists against the Nuggets in the season opener, but just in general, like a really good, solid player, you know, worth, I forget, he got like, what, 4 years, $52 million, something like that, so 13 a year. Very reasonable rate. Like, I'd much rather be paying Joe Ingles that kind of money than Tim Hardaway Jr., who we should have mentioned in the disappointments, 4 years, $71 million. So,
and a descending contract.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So
just note of that.
Yeah, so shouts to the Jazz, shouts to Jingling Joe for a hell of a start to the year. And thank you, Joe, for helping anchor one of my fantasy teams. You're doing the Lord's work, my friend.
I was actually, I was looking up, or I was on Twitter, and, you know, Joe had a good game, and people were coming up like, he's 30?
Yeah.
He's only been in the league for 4 years.
Right.
They thought he was coming out of a college. Oh, yeah. Like, no, he's
25.
I think he was 27 or something. He's like an older guy.
Right.
And now he's finding his footing in the league, much like a guy in his fourth season would, just much younger.
Yep.
So here's hoping that he lives through the contract that he's on with the efficiency that he has right now.
Yeah.
I think that alone is a win for the Jazz. As long as that last year doesn't become a problem.
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, hell, I'm very impressed. I mean,
oh yeah,
I had the Jazz as one of my, I think, my 8 seed. And they've had a kind of up and down start to the year, but Ingles will help a lot in that regard. So that's going to do it this week for the NBA podcast. Thank you all again for tuning in. Reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. You can find all of our handles in our Twitter bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Have a good one, you two.
You too, Brian.